Hey, it's Ian Furness for Aurora LASIK and Dr. J. Rudd. For about 15 years, I have had to use reading glasses for everything, reading text, looking at my phone, script writing, whatever it was. I had to use reading glasses, but no more. I had refractive lens exchange at Aurora LASIK with Dr. J. Rudd. It's life-changing. I wish I would have done this years ago. You can check it out as well. Go to auroralasik.com. That's auroralasik.com. Dr. J. Rudd and his staff are sensational. No more readers. Get your consultation scheduled today. That's auroralasik.com.
Now, from the Star Reynolds Sports Desk, your 93.3 KJRFM Sports Headlines.
All right, 2 o'clock headlines brought to you by Buddy's Goodies and Glass. Kevin?
Ian, it's always 420 at Buddy's.
Just moments ago, Pete Carroll speaking to the media ahead of tomorrow's preseason game. 5 o'clock kickoff, 4 o'clock pregame, Fox 13. Chicago Bears are in town. No Drew Locke. He has COVID. He'll be out the next 5 days. Geno Smith, he confirmed, will start the game. Jacob Eason will play a little bit more. Pete did say that they really kind of knew something was up because they were expecting to do some extra work after practice yesterday with the number one receiving group, who won't play in the preseason game, it doesn't sound like, and Locke was unable to go. He said he really had a hard time and was struggling yesterday, and so they got him tested, and the positive test came back. Stunning, I know. Wow, has your worst practice of the year. Coincidence, Kevin? Coincidence?
I think not.
Also, Ken Walker III, running back. No surgery, no sports hernia, but he is having a procedure. Yes, so he'll be out for a little while. They expect him back, as well as Artie Burns for the opening game of the year, the first game against the Denver Broncos. And your friend of mine, Russ Wilson.
I'm surprised you didn't finish that with a, please, tip your wager.
LeBron James, 2-year, $97.1 million extension with the Lakers on the day that the NBA schedule comes out. By the way, did you see how the NBA did it? They did very NFL-like. Leaked out, like, games over the last, like, 2 weeks, and the whole schedule came out today.
All here the in NBA Seattle, reporters are like, this is ridiculous.
This is
can
stupid.
We stop?
Yeah, and here in Seattle, we don't care because we don't have a team. Just yet. We're about 3 years away. 3 years from now, we'll probably care. Bonnie Lake Sumner, Little League team, plays later today against West champion Hawaii.
Oh, aloha. You know what aloha means?
Hello goodbye. And goodbye. Hello and goodbye.
I know. I was going with
it. Good. I like it. I like it. They play at 4 o'clock later on today in the Little League World Series. And by the way, 49451, that's a telemorphic text line. Your thoughts? We'll get those coming up bottom of the hour. Also, talk back, Mike. If you want to say something to us verbally, yell, scream at us. Yell at me, yell at Kevin. You can do that on the Talkback mic on the iHeartRadio app on the 93.3 streaming part of the iHeartRadio app. Just looking for the little red microphone and speak. All right, welcome in. Here we go, 2 o'clock hour as we roll on. Ian Furness with you and the and Kevin Shockey's over there in the Redbox producer's booth. And I think you would agree with me, Kev. We're excited for this next guest to come back and join us again on a weekly basis this year, one more time. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Put your hands together. Steve Palazzolo, Pro Football Focus, back with us one more time. How are you, sir?
Doing great. I appreciate the welcome, as always. It's great to be back. It's great to have football back, so I really appreciate it.
We're going to do more of a preview in the weeks to come, but I think today would be good for us to maybe look back on some guys last year a little bit and what their grades were a year ago, but also, more importantly, I guess, as we go through the preseason, and we do, if you're a PFF subscriber, if you follow those guys on Twitter, you'll see the lists come out and who the top rookies were in a preseason week and things like that. So it's all worth looking at. Take a step back, though, Steve. First of all, with PFF grades in the preseason, what goes into that, and is it different at all from what we see in the regular season?
No, it's all the same stuff as the regular season. We're just grading every player on every play from a production standpoint. You know, did they make the block? Did they miss the block? Make a great throw, bad throw, putting grades on it. The only issue there is there's tiny sample sizes. You know, when you see a guy that plays 20 snaps, you're talking that's a third of a regular game for, you know, so trying to glean into the production grades is difficult sometimes because the samples are so small, but we do treat it the same way. And similarly, just kind of use it as like a guiding light for, you know, how well a guy performed.
Let's look at Seattle week one. And we will, by the way, we will not bury the lead too much further, but we will get to the quarterback situation in a second, which is just an absolute gong show. But before I get to that, let's look back at week one. And maybe specifically, we'll start on the offensive line because Abe Lucas didn't start, but he came in and played meaningful snaps and apparently looked like he played well. Charles Cross did start and play a little bit into the second half and got a lot of snaps there as well. Let's talk about Seattle's two bookend rookie tackles and what the PFF thought of those two guys. We'll start with Charles Cross.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good start for both guys. Cross had a low 70s grade, and Lucas was in the low 80s. But, you know, Charles Cross was exactly what you had hoped, you know, with the number 9 overall pick. You know, was excellent in pass protection. You just see how easily he moves. You know, I thought that was evident right away. So it was a very good debut for Cross, and grading similar to what he did at Mississippi State. So better pass protector than run blocker, and, you know, just a good start for him. And Lucas, you know, hit the similar profile at Washington State too, where it's, you know, they just drop back to pass so much. The question is, what can he do in the run game? And that's actually where he excelled the first night. Zone blocking scheme, backside of runs, front side of runs. I thought Lucas did a really nice job. So one of the biggest stories, obviously, in Seattle this year is how those tackles look. If Lucas is definitely going to, you know, have a chance at the starting lineup, you know, it was a really good start for him.
Let's take a step back with both those guys. It's interesting. You know, Seattle more than likely, and Jake Curran now has a back spasms in practice yesterday, and I'm sure for Seattle standpoint, I'm guessing, and, you know, I don't know this, Pete Carroll would never admit this, but I'm guessing when you draft a guy 9th overall in the first round and then take a guy also at a tackle position in the 3rd round, you're probably guessing or hoping that, look, those are my two bookend tackles, albeit rookies, for the years to come. That's the best possible scenario. But I thought, I don't know what you guys thought at the time of those two picks. I know we talked to you afterwards, but I can't remember what I had for breakfast yesterday, so help me out. You're talking about two bookend tackles in the NFL that are both air raid guys. Lucas was drafted by or recruited by and played for Mike Leach before he left. And Cross was a Mike Leach guy, wasn't recruited by him, but played for Mike Leach in the air raid. How unique is that today's NFL to have guys that like that probably there are concerns about the run game? But, you know, what were your thoughts when those two guys were picked?
Yeah, so I think it is a difficult projection sometimes coming out of the air raid because you just don't have the run game versatility in that scheme. So it is a bit of a projection. We've seen other Mike Leach guys in recent years where we've had grades on them. Andre Dillard from Washington State was a first rounder, and he hasn't been great for the Philadelphia Eagles and banged up. So it's a projection, but I know there were guys within PFF who absolutely loved Charles Cross. You know, we started doing our own internal rankings. We had one guy actually put him at number 1 on the entire draft board. Absolutely loved Charles Cross because he was so smooth in pass protection. And again, I think we saw that immediately. So getting him at 9, he ended up number 1. On the PFF draft board as far as tackles go. So we liked the Cross pick, and I think Lucas being in the 3rd was a good spot for him, right? I mean, I think that was good, and if you end up with him as a starter, that's great value in the 3rd round. You know, I think the caution here is not only the air raid projection for both guys, but just rookie tackles in general. It is so difficult to just step in and be good right away. It's one of those positions where guys usually don't peak until years 3, 4, and 5, so got to have some patience, even though, you know, last week it was a really nice start for both of them.
Is Steve Palazzolo, Pro Football Focus, PFF.com, joining us here on the Beacon Plumbing Hotline, joining us again for another year of football, which is absolutely fantastic. Gabe Jackson was ranked 51st among 82 guards last year by PFF, and he wasn't in there. They had Phil Haynes in there at right guard this week. They gave kind of Jackson the old veteran treatment, but we have seen Haynes in there quite a bit at right guard. It feels like Haynes is pushing Jackson, and there's a true competition there. It hasn't been talked about a lot out here. Phil Haynes, I think, graded out pretty well for you guys last year when he did play, and Gabe Jackson didn't have a great year. Do you think that's a move Seattle could make by a PFF, what you guys have graded?
Yeah, Haynes, you know, he graded in the green, you know, just under 70 last year on limited snaps, you know, 150-plus snaps, but we haven't seen a lot of Phil Haynes in, you know, in NFL action. And just like I was saying, hey, you know, careful with Charles Cross and Abe Lucas projections because linemen take a couple of years. Haynes is like right in that spot, year 4, where a lot of linemen take a big jump. And even without the experience, you could see a Phil Haynes, you know, take a leap forward. And when you're talking about a Seattle team that, let's be serious, this is a rebuilding looking type of roster, right? Yeah, you would. I think a team like that would prefer the younger player, the year 4 player, take over for a Gabe Jackson. So if that's in the cards. You know, it'd be intriguing to see if Phil Haynes can build upon that. He had a great grade. He had the top grade among all offensive players week one for the Seahawks in the preseason. So definitely something to keep an eye on, especially if they're looking to just get younger across the board on this roster.
Yeah, I think they are. I think he's going to put there's people even out here have talked about Jackson maybe being a guy that could get cut on the 53-man. It won't save him that much money, so I kind of doubt that'll happen. But, yeah, I think Haynes is going to push. Before we move to the defense, here we go. Let's go quarterbacks. And, of course, we have a different look this week. We thought that what time was it? It was about 3:30 yesterday when we're listening to Pete Carroll do his post-practice news conference. And, you know, Kevin and I were on the air yesterday. I was on the air out at Seahawks at the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. Looked over and I told Kevin, look who's taking snaps with the number one center, Austin Blythe. It is Drew Locke. He's going to get the number one this week and he's going to start. Pete confirmed that after practice. Just to reset our show today, Locke didn't look good in practice. Probably a reason for that, because if you're getting tested in today's NFL for COVID, it's because you feel sick or have symptoms. He tests positive. Geno Smith will start again this week. Let's look back, though, to Pittsburgh last week. And Smith versus Locke. What were the grades for those two guys PFF-wise last week?
Yeah, so we had Geno with one of the better grades on the team the other night. Locke was kind of middle of the pack. Locke was low 60s. You know, Geno Smith was high 80s. He had a big-time throw when they rolled him out on the corner route and everything. I thought Geno looked pretty good. And, you know, you would probably know better than me on the, hey, why is Drew Locke going to get those first-team reps? My assumption there is they wanted it. It's probably close on both guys. I'm sure they – just like you might want to Phil Haynes starting a guard, you probably want Drew Locke to start, you know, just to see, because there's more unknown, I think, in Drew Locke's career. You know, that he's had some nice moments with the Broncos. He's got some tools to work with and everything. There's just more of an unknown. So I think you prefer to see a Drew Locke, you know, go and grab that job and see what he can do, because he's got the big arm and the ability to push the ball down the field and all that stuff. But I think, again, Geno had a better game right off the bat. And again, it's a handful of plays in the preseason. We've seen Geno Smith even just last year, right? He had some games that were pretty good, some games that weren't pretty good. Yeah, so depends on how you want to weigh those things. But I'd say the early just on-field performance, Geno Smith gets the nod. But yeah, I could see Seattle once Drew Locke's back out there trying to get him those reps at you know, with the ones to see if he can take that job.
See Pelizzolo, PFF.com. Yeah, well, in one game, you can see Geno look good for a series or two back when he came in the Rams game when Russell got hurt. And then all of a sudden, it's just, you know, then there's that play. There's always that play with Geno that you just kind of like, oh, what the hell did you do? Just going back in time a little bit, Drew Locke, it feels like there has to be an upside there. Whether or not you ever realize that upside as a quarterback in the NFL is a whole different story. But there has to be an upside. You kind of mentioned he's had some moments, you know, when he was with Denver. What does PFF think of Drew Locke overall?
When he's been out there, he's been a below average starter. And that's just the reality of where he's been in 3+ years in the NFL. Below average, but a guy that will, in 2020, when he had, you know, we had a more of an extended look at Drew Locke, it was high big-time throw rate, high turnover worthy play rate. So big time throws for us, you know, further down the field, accurate, the ability to create chunk plays off of those throws. Turnover worthy is, you know, it's when you misread the defense or fumble or, you know, put the ball in harm's way essentially. So there was some volatility to Drew Locke's game, which for me is the intriguing part there is, hey, if you could cut down on some of those mistakes, this guy has a chance to flip the field. He can make some of these special throws. So it's a style that I think you can grow into. Look, there's hope and there's projection, and he's got to do some of the easy stuff better, and some of the adjusted accuracy and completion numbers have been below average for Drew Locke. But when you have a guy that can create big plays, you know, there's something there, and that there's something that's, you know, attractive if he can cut down on some of the mistakes. So he's been below average, but showed flashes of, hey, we can create big plays here, and that's why I think Drew Locke is that intriguing option, because a coach can say, hey, we can cut down on some of the mistakes, and we'll see if Locke is able to do that.
Steve Pelizzolo, PFF. Other side of the football, the star, at least statistically for Seattle in that game, would have been Boye Mafe, the rookie edge rusher from Minnesota, the second-round draft pick. He had a couple sacks. He had a forced fumble. He had a tackle for loss. He had a quarterback hit as well. Chased down a punt returner in the game on special teams. He looked good to statistically in the stat sheet. What did PFF think about Boye Mafe?
Oh, yeah, he was our highest graded player. So this is an easy one. I love it when it matches up with the stats. It's an easy explanation. You know, it wasn't just the sacks, man. It was the burst that he showed at Minnesota, at the Senior Bowl. It all showed up on the field. One of the sacks is Kenny Pickett probably holding the ball too long from one perspective. On the other perspective, Mafe is just tracking him down. He looked explosive. I mean, look, Seattle hasn't had an explosive pass rush over the last couple of years. We've talked about that a million times on this show. 2 years ago, they're bringing Jamal Adams down off the edge because they just don't have anybody. Mafe has a chance to be that dude right away. Always has some work to do in the run game, but I think as far as pure pass rushing goes, just an awesome debut for him. And I think showing that Mafe can become an immediate contributor on that defense.
I do like when the stats kind of match up. And even the eye test matched up. I mean, everything kind of, all three kind of came together. The eye test, his stats, you know, how he filled up the sheet. And then, you know, basically what PFF says, which is, looks at it a completely different way than maybe most of us do, he did look, and I think the word you use, I think Peach used that as well, explosive. Like, there's been some Cliff Averill comparisons already, and I think it's just because of how he looks and what his pass rush moves look like. There looks like a little bit of Cliff in there, but, you know, Pete kind of put the brakes on that yesterday. He said, hey, you know, Cliff came here as a pretty good player already. This kid's a rookie coming out of there, but it was a hell of a start. Maybe not as good a start for the rookie corners, Tariq Woolen and Kobe Bryant. I don't know. It looked like they got kind of pushed around a little bit. How'd they look?
Yeah, Bryant, both had below average grades. Bryant was in the 40s. You know, Tariq Woolen at 35, and you know, Woolen, you just kind of saw. He's just a young corner, man. He's only played the position for 2+ years. He was a converted receiver, absolute freak of an athlete. But even the athleticism on the field when you see him, if technique is off, guys can run away from you. Guys can get behind the defense. There was a blown coverage in there where Woolen was in the middle of that as well on the touchdown. So it's what we saw from Tariq Woolen at UTSA, where you obviously see the talent and the skills, the ability to just in pure man coverage be, you know, play sticky coverage, but zone aspect of it. He missed a tackle too. Some of the technique stuff, Woolen has a ways to go. So I think he's one of the most fascinating prospects in the draft because we haven't seen a whole lot of workouts like Tariq Woolen put out there with his size, length, 4.2-something, 40. But there's a ways to go, I think, technique wise. And then the same thing, Kobe Bryant's just had some rough plays in there and on 39 snaps. So it's just like O-line, it's a tough position to play as rookies. And I thought, you know, you saw that in their debuts.
I'll wrap it up with this. For people, listen, PFF.com, all that information is there. We'll talk to you next week after preseason game number 2 and see how things look and see if any of those rookies can flip it around or if the rookies that did well can continue their progression. You guys aren't just out there to go through the numbers we just talked about, and the numbers, by the way, that every NFL team looks at is they use PFF as well. But fantasy football is upon us. I'll let you go ahead and pump the tires up a little bit on what you've got going on. And a spoiler alert, DK Metcalf, not ranked very high by PFF, probably because of the quarterback situation, wide receiver number 22. But give us your thoughts on what people can find as far as PFF.com and fantasy football.
So that's what it is. We have grades that evaluate players, but we have some really good fantasy analysts that could add that context and add something like DK's quarterback situation to affect his rankings. And it's what I use to win my fantasy leagues. I just use the PFF fantasy rankings because that's not my job. We have people that can do it at PFF.com. So fantasy, some of the gambling stuff, it's all there at PFF.com, and this is the time of year to get in there.
There's a draft guide and everything else. That's why I like. Listen, you can go out there and do a search and try to find cheat sheets and draft guides and all that stuff. It's kind of cool when you're already subscribing to something and it's right there for you, which PFF has. Yeah, I've looked at a couple other rankings with DK, and I was like, I wonder what PFF has him at. 47th overall, wide receiver 22, but I think that's, like you said, that's a product. Wide receiver 22 is a product of – who the hell's going to throw him the ball, Steve? Like, he can't, yep. He can't throw it to himself, right?
That's absolutely it. That's what fantasy is all about. It's about opportunity along with skill. So that's going to potentially hurt DK this year.
All right. Give us the MO. How do people sign up if they're not already subscribing to PFF? What can they do?
Yeah, it's right at PFF.com. There's all sorts of links to the subscriptions. We have a new thing called PFF Plus. We're kind of consolidating all the subscriptions. So just get over to the website, and we got an app that we're building, and you'll see it right there. PFF Plus is the new subscription package.
An app. Oh, that's intriguing, Cal.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's intriguing.
A lot of app building going on right now. That's right.
I like it. All right, my friend, PFF.com, Pro Football Focus. Check it out, folks. Get that subscription going. Plus, not only do you get to follow your favorite teams, but the fantasy draft guide is there as well with PFF Plus. You can check that out at PFF.com. Steve, we'll talk to you next week, my friend. Thank you.
All right. Sounds good. Appreciate it.
And, yeah, excited to have Steve on again all year during the football season. Be great to have him on. We'll come back. Check the text, 49451. That is the Tullamore Dew text line when it's game time.
It's Tully time.
We'll do that next. Hey, it's Ian Furness for my good friend Dr. J. Rudd at Aurora LASIK and auroralasik.com. No more readers. How about that? For about 15 years, I've used reading glasses, but no more. I had refractive lens exchange. I can tell you for a fact it's a life-changing and also something I wish I would have done years ago. You need to check it out as well. Go to auroralasik.com. That's auroralasik.com. Dr. J. Rudd. He is absolutely sensational. Get your consultation scheduled. That's auroralasik.com for your refractive lens exchange.
Hear us anywhere, anytime on Alexa or Google Play at Sports Radio 93.3 KJRFM and on the iHeartRadio app. Now back to Ian Furness.
A little more college football news for you. We kind of keep an eye on what's going on with UCLA and the University of California Board of Regents for that system. Their conversations continue. Pete Thamel, Yahoo, right? Yahoo, I believe Pete is, right?
I'm sorry, one more time.
Pete is Yahoo, right?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
A couple things coming out today. Presidents and chancellors to make up the College Football Playoffs Board of Managers held a brief discussion on Monday.
He moved to ESPN. I'm sorry.
Okay. ESPN. That's right. Major college football. They're talking about major college football operating under a governance structure outside of the NCAA. Also, the College Football Playoff Board of Managers hasn't shut the door on expanding the College Football Playoff before 2026. So presidents discussed how much money was left on the table by playing out the final four seasons of deal as currently constructed. I cannot fathom how they're not understanding that there's money being left on the table. It is mind boggling. But a lot of changes going on outside the NCAA structure is an interesting deal because the college football playoff itself is outside the NCAA structure. So exactly. You're playing a playoff that has nothing to do with the NCAA. Yet you're an NCAA champion in a sense. Very confusing. Way too many smart people are going to have to figure that stuff out besides me and you, Kev. But expansion of the playoff is inevitable. I mean, Stuart Mandel told us that yesterday. It's inevitable. It's going to happen. The question is when. And the bigger question is, would they do it before it's the current deal is done in 2026?
Are we someday going to look back at 2022 as the most, like, significant year of changes for college sports? I mean, obviously, like, I think ultimately the kind of these few years with NIL and these, but I think it feels like this is going to be, people are gonna be like, man, remember that off season after the 2021 season.
I think if for no other reason that at least USC and maybe UCLA, the two LA schools leaving the Pacific 12 Conference and going to the Big Ten, if nothing else, that's just such a monumental change in the landscape of college sports. I mean, it's one thing when, you know, the UCL or when Texas and Oklahoma go to the SEC at one point, you know, I mean, geographically, there's already teams in their state that are in that conference.
Right.
The old Southwest Conference broke up so many years ago, the Big 12 coming in and taking, you know, it that had already been a little bit of a tumultuous thing. The Pac-12 had been in business for like almost 120 years.
And they've only added.
And the anchor tenants were the LA schools. Monumental change. I'll be very honest with you. Minor league football doesn't work. It just doesn't work. All due respect to whatever team we've got coming here next year. Minor league football doesn't work. We're headed towards a minor league football, I guess, a structure that maybe it would work because it's, you know, based on some schools. But, you know, for some reason, this is always forgotten. And I guess because it's a business and you could make, I mean, so if you're outside of NCAA rules and you make this some sort of like minor league system, can you play college football as long as you want then, as opposed to having eligibility? Like, how does that all work? Like, I think a lot of times people have these grand ideas like, well, this would be great. Might as well just be semi-pro anyway. And like, let's remember the numbers of people that go to the NBA or the NFL. It's less than 5% of college football players at the highest level, much less overall, go to play in the NFL. Alabama's the greatest team ever, every year, right?
Yeah.
What do they have? Maybe 10 guys get drafted. Out of those 10 guys, how many are really good? Two or three, maybe?
Sometimes more, but I mean, it's and that's the most extreme example.
Yeah.
By far.
So I just don't quite get it. You know, I love college football because it's, you know, my school or someone else's school. There is a little tradition. There is something cool about seeing those guys in class. I mean, I remember having Ruben Mays in class. It was awesome. You know, like, he went to class, so I figured I better go to class. If the best running back in the country is going to class, I should probably go.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. I the old man get off my lawn and me just shakes my head. Let's get some text. 49451. What do you got, Kev?
Thin-skinned Patrick Reed, a.k.a. Captain Saudi, a.k.a. Cheater, suing a broadcaster for defaming his character?
Yeah, Brandel
Shan. Wow, from 253.
Brandel Shan, believe, from the Golf Channel, just been absolutely torpedoing all things Live Tour and Patrick Reed, period. Good luck on that. $750 million. Huh?
I mean, I guess if you're Patrick Reed, at some point you're like, well, every bridge is burned. I might as well try to get more money on my way out because everyone hates me anyway.
Yeah.
But, man, what a sad existence it seems like, right?
Yep.
I mean, it's cool that he's really good at golf and makes a lot of money for it, but yeesh. I don't know.
Let me read this real quick. This just popped in. What if they change the draft rules to be more like the junior hockey system? I'm assuming this is for the NFL.
Yeah.
Players can be drafted and play well in college. Definitely not going to happen, but made my head explode thinking about it. But if they were already drafted, they wouldn't look at trade converting all the time.
Transfer.
Yeah. Not ready for me.
That's...
I think they'd still look at transferring because you're drafted by, say, the Seahawks draft you in the fourth round. And you're going, and currently you're at the University of Nevada.
Okay.
In Reno. You're drafted in the fourth round. Seahawks want you to, you know, you're going to go back and not sign for a year or two. You're going to want you to go back and work on, you know, pass blocking. If you're, if you're a really good run blocker, you want to work on pass block, whatever it might be. Because that's kind of how hockey works.
Right.
They're not going to sign you. Although hockey can sign you. That is the one difference. Baseball, you can't, because baseball has, but baseball, you're gone. You're either signed or not. But you can't, they can sign you. Do you transfer because you want to go get a better level of play? Maybe you wouldn't. Maybe you would just say, you know what, I'm already drafted. I'm not going to get drafted higher. I'm going to make, you know, I'm going to sign probably. I like where I'm at. Maybe you would eliminate some transferring.
I mean, it would be interesting to see.
It's an interesting thing.
What would the team, because that.
Because junior hockey, you can't transfer. You can't go somewhere else.
And at that point, it's the team.
Right.
The NFL team.
Mm-hmm.
And would they then start to, like, say, hey, it sure would be good if you could go to this school to work in this system.
There might be part of... Dance with me here for a second. I wonder if that it would be the opposite. Wherever you're at, you are good enough and in a decent enough situation where you got drafted. Why change that? Why go somewhere where all of a sudden, well, wait a second, you might be competing with somebody else for playing time, right?
Well, if you've already been drafted,
right.
But what I'm saying is I wonder if the NFL team,
Well, that's what I'm saying with the NFL team. Like, the NFL team is like, why do I want to send my guy to the SEC where maybe a better chance to get hurt?
Yeah.
Maybe he's not going to have the same playing time opportunities. Maybe he's already there. I'm just using extreme examples.
It'd be really interesting.
See, I really think the junior hockey model works and works well.
It feels like it does.
And the only part of the junior hockey model that doesn't work is, guess who's involved? Is the NCAA.
Yeah.
So the NCAA, the second you sign a junior hockey contract for the CHL.
A junior hockey.
junior hockey contract. If you're going to play in the Western League, Ontario, or Quebec. For example, our guy Shane Wright played in the Ontario League this year.
Mm-hmm.
Number two overall pick from your Seattle Kraken.
Damn right.
Okay. Well, he could never play college hockey because he's considered a pro, even though he's not. And in today's day and age of name, image, and likeness, those lines are blurred even more. But that is a rule for NCAA hockey. Yet you can play in the United States Hockey League, which is a similar league, and they pay a stipend. They kind of want they kind of want it both ways. But I think the junior hockey model, in the sense of the guys getting drafted and then going back and playing with players their same age and getting better, I think by and large it works. Now, here's where it doesn't always work. You can get drafted and never get signed.
Right.
You know, like in currently in the end. But I think that works better for the teams, for the pro teams. Here's why. You get drafted. You look at a guy. You watch him for two more years or a year, whatever it is. And you're like, never developed, never got better. I never have to waste money on him. Like, I don't have to. I'm not. You know, it's a draft pick, but I'm not investing anything
and
in
they, it. They can then be drafted again after that, is that correct?
Yeah. Who'd that happen to this year? Was it? Well, or you can get re-signed. Like, Rubinsky got drafted by Florida and then got re-signed by Pittsburgh, I believe it was. So, yeah, that can happen. So, for the NFL, would the NFL do that?
No.
No, probably not. But it's an interesting question that is brought up. So. All right.
Okay.
Yeah, watching your heads explode made that text totally worth it. Yeah, you did. You made our heads explode. Not quite explode, but, made us think. Okay, David Mahler is here. Softy, we call him. He'll join us next.
Hey, it's Ian Furness for Aurora LASIK and Dr. J. Rudd. For about 15 years, I have had to use reading glasses for everything. Reading text, looking at my phone, script writing, whatever it was, I had to use reading glasses, but no more. I had refractive lens exchange at Aurora LASIK with Dr. J. Rudd. It's life-changing. I wish I would have done this years ago. You can check it out as well. Go to auroralasik.com. That's auroralasik.com. Dr. J. Rudd and his staff are sensational. No more readers. Get your consultation scheduled today. That's auroralasik.com.
Hear us anywhere, anytime on Alexa or Google Play at Sports Radio 93.3 KJRFM and on the iHeartRadio app. Now back to Ian Furness.
Dave Softy Mahler is here with us. He, unlike others in the town, doesn't have COVID. Nope. Turn up. Nope.
I'm sorry. I know. It's years of practice years on the other practice. Studio.
I know. It's like a whole new.
I'm sorry. The idea that I would have to turn on my own microphone is, in the words of my late father, now foreign to me.
What are you?
It's foreign.
Colin Coward?
I have no idea.
That big time where you don't have to turn your own microphone?
Well, we haven't done it in this chair for how many years? When did we move into that building?
Well, that's right,
across the
always,
hall?
That's right, because Softy always did it on the guest mic.
When I did Crosstalk, I sat on the guest mic, and there was no button.
There's no button, that's
but
right.
But in the captain's chair that you're sitting in right now.
Yes.
You know what's funny about that, by the way? So the old, not the old building, but the old building. So 351, not 190. So I've been here now. This is the fourth different studio that I've been in.
Okay, so the second building.
The second building.
That's where I started.
First building was 190 across from Uptown China.
Yeah.
Underneath the Sonics.
Sonics place.
Right. And then we went to 351.
Which was also below the Sonics.
Right. Now we're at 645, but now we're on the opposite side of 645. We went from the east side of 645 to the west side of 645.
Where there's no cell service.
Exactly. Yes. So 351, and somebody could probably maybe confirm this for me. Used to be, and you might remember this restaurant, Ivor's Captain's Table.
Yes.
Remember that?
I do remember
and
that place.
I'm pretty sure that is where 351 is
exactly
now.
Where it's at, yeah.
Right.
Yes.
And we would go there all the time.
Yes.
All the time.
Yes.
Get the mask, the Ivor mask.
And you know what was across the street?
What's that?
Black Angus.
That's right. You're
Black
right.
Angus
exactly.
Across the street. Yeah.
Exactly. And now it's like an apartment complex or something.
That's the Daily Double
it's unbelievable.
Of Northwest iconic places.
And you know what? I thought growing up as a kid, that Ivor's Captain's Table was like fine dining. Because you'd pull up underneath.
Wait a second.
Get out of your car. You'd take the elevator upstairs. Yeah. There was somebody waiting to greet you.
Yeah.
Oh, I loved that place.
It's fine dining.
God.
It's fine dining when you do the following.
Yeah.
Order the smoked salmon chowder as opposed to the white chowder.
There you go. Ooh, yeah, we're going crazy now.
That's fine dining at that point in time.
Oh, yeah.
That's when you get fine dining.
I wasn't allowed to order appetizers when we out.
Really?
When we went out.
Why was that?
You can't go to Ivor's and not have the chowder, fella.
Yeah, got
one of the two chowders.
And the bread, by the way.
All right, kids. Keep your meal under $10.
I never said that to you.
Oh,
that's a lie.
Softy.
I'm gonna. You know what? Next time I see your folks, I'm gonna ask them.
You think? Okay. You think I'm telling? I promise you.
That is hilarious.
All right, guys,
well, when
keep
you were
it
growing
under
up,
10.
You probably could keep it under 10 if you're on the kids' menu.
Exactly. I mean, you know,
right, but
grilled cheese sandwich for $2.
Yeah. Look at me.
Sunday for $1.
Do you think I wanted to order off the kids' menu by the time I was like 8 or 9?
No.
Probably by the time you're 4 or 5.
I think you were born and you were going right to the buffet. That's what I think. Captain's table closed in 1991. November of 1991.
What were you doing in 1991?
I was 18 years old, graduating high school, watching the Huskies win the national title. That's what I was doing. I'll tell you what it's like someday. You and me can talk.
Well, here's a funny thing.
Very fun.
Here's a funny thing. I covered that team that year.
I know.
And traveled with them all year.
I know. Well, you people that don't know.
Like old.
No, maybe you don't know that he grew up a Husky fan.
Yeah.
This guy.
I wasn't a Husky fan necessarily then.
And then he got hit in the head.
I do tell people it's that year. I covered him. When did I travel with him? Like for 4 years. And that was the third year.
Yeah.
And, you know, selfishly, when I was on the road with him, I did want him to win because it made the job easier.
Of course.
You know,
Ivers, Captain's Table. God, I miss that place.
Well,
you know my idea, right? Told you my idea, my million-dollar idea.
Oh, you want to do like all the old restaurants?
I want to do a retro food court.
Yeah, with all the old ones,
like Flaky Jake's.
Okay, so what else?
Pietro's Pizza, Shakey's, Godfather's.
There's one Shakey's left.
Yeah, I heard about that. There's a Godfather's in Federal Way as well. Bring back Winchell's. Put a Winchell's in there.
The donuts?
Yeah, they were fantastic. Yeah.
There's an old Winchell's.
There's one by Dick's on 45th, but it's not Winchell's anymore.
No,
it has like the sign, but it's somebody
Winchell's
else.
Winchell's had like a big donut as a sign.
Yeah, you know what's funny about that? I will tell you, just I know we're kind of random here, but I live now off the Kent Des Moines exit, off of I-5.
Right.
I won't tell you where I live because I'm not stupid, right?
But I mean, arguable.
In my fat tur days. Yeah. Or fat days, as I like to call them.
Yes, yes.
I would go from UW after the press conference on Monday.
Okay.
I would stop at my current exit where I live now, get off the exit, go to the old Dunkin' Donuts, which is now a Midway Donuts. Yes. And get
is
my
Dunkin' Donuts here?
Well, it was
for
a Dunkin'.
Like a day.
Yeah. Huh. And then it became a Midway. They use like the same font and all that stuff to confuse people, right?
Yeah, they did it in Portland too.
So I would get off the exit and I would get my favorite vanilla cream filled powdered donut, which I still love.
Sure.
Two of those. Swing around, stop by Burger King, get a Whopper, get back on a freeway, and go to the Emerald Queen.
When you went to the UW.
Now I live there.
When you were at the UW.
And I've been to that donut shop like twice.
Was the UW still bringing these Ezels in?
They bring all kinds of cool stuff in there, man.
I think last time I went there.
All kinds of cool stuff.
I love the Ezels.
By pizza.
The way, 206 wants to know, do you guys make Softy Fluss his own toilet too?
What does that mean?
No, we do it. We go in and do it for him.
That's why he has producers.
Turn the mic on, all that stuff?
That's why he has producers.
Yeah.
Jason will have to flush your toilet.
We are now in this eco-friendly thing where we flush it like once a week. We just let it fill up. And
you
then,
and your wife. Yeah,
Sundays at 5, we flush it.
That's smart. You know what? I respect you for taking care of the environment.
But we only poop once a week. We leave the house if we have to.
Come, you swing by Winchell's.
Exactly. Go to Ivers.
Have a cup of coffee and next thing you know.
I'm kidding, you knob.
All right, what are you doing
today?
What are you doing?
I don't know. Mike Florio, sorry, is with us today. Petros is with us today. Hugh Millen's with us today. And I got a great, you can only have one, that might make, if you're a Husky and a Seahawk fan, this might make your head fall off.
When was the last time you did you can only have one?
Well, it's been a while, but, you know, I almost punched Dick Fain right in the throat yesterday.
Really?
Did you hear about that?
Oh, but that's kind of fun.
You'll find out what's going on next. Yeah.
See ya.
For the mild-mannered and marginally objectionable Ian Furness, this is Panel Day saying so long, everyone.
Hey, it's Ian Furness for my good friend Dr. J. Rudd at Aurora LASIK and auroralasik.com. No more readers. How about that? For about 15 years, I've used reading glasses, but no more. I had refractive lens exchange. I can tell you for a fact it's a life-changing and also something I wish I would have done years ago. You need to check it out as well. Go to auroralasik.com. That's auroralasik.com. Dr. J. Rudd, he is absolutely sensational. Get your consultation scheduled. That's auroralasik.com for your refractive lens exchange.